This is Kara Thandry at the Ashland City Library, and we are talking today with Gary Vashis about his Vietnam War memories. It is October the 11th at 1 o'clock. Gary, when was your birthday?
10/13/46.
And this interview is done by the Ashland City Library through Humanities Kansas in conjunction with the National Endowment for the Arts Big Read Project. Gary, what branch of service were you?
Army.
What was your rank?
When I got out, I was a sergeant, E5.
And where did you serve?
Germany, Europe.
Were you drafted or did you enlist?
Well, I enlisted.
Why?
Well, I couldn't. I went to the bank. They wouldn't loan me money because I was on the list to go, and they didn't want to get involved in that. And I just got tired of it, and I thought, and nobody give you a job because you might get called up the next day. I had a job, but if I'd went to get something better or something, I wouldn't have got it. They wouldn't hire you if you was on the list.
On the draft list?
On the draft list.
When did you enlist?
Well, it was in July of 1967.
So you joined because your options were so limited.
Well, I just wanted to get it over with, get it out of the way. Sitting around wondering if you could. See, my boss had me on a deferment. And every time I get to top of the list, then I go back. And I didn't like that. I thought, well, if I'm going to go, I need to go and get it over with.
Why were you receiving a deferment?
Because he wanted me to work on the ranch. Agricultural deferment.
Okay. Why did you pick the Army?
Well, I ain't a duck. I don't want to join the Navy or the Marines because I don't. I just soon stay. I want to keep 2 feet on the ground.
Okay. What were your first days in the service like?
First days in the service? We didn't know what the hell we were doing. They sent us to, I went to Fort Campbell, Kentucky. They sent me a paper, said I need to go to Denver to the deal. And they run us through a whole bunch of tests and doctors and all kinds of stuff and information, and they was writing. Burned it a whole day deal. And then about dark, they put us on a bus and sent us to the airport. And we flew to Fort Campbell, Kentucky. We got there in the middle of the night. We had a little time at the airport, so we bought all the whiskey we could get our hands on. And we stuck it in our duffel bag. And on the bus, they flew us to Fort Campbell, and then what's the guitar place?
Nashville.
We flew to Nashville, and they put us on a bus to go to Fort Campbell, and we broke up the whiskey and started passing it around. And we was in pretty good shape when we got there. And these old drill sergeants come in there and started hollering and yelling, run us out. We had to get a mattress and some blankets and stuff, and they gonna put us in bed. Just about the time we sat on the bed, they said, "Get up, let's go." And for the first 96 hours, I don't think we had any sleep. We were so tired, we just passed out.
Oh, when was this? Huh? When was this?
In 1967. When I got my, that's when I went in, that's when I went to the bus, and July 30th of 1967.
July 30th. Okay.
And they put us in a bunch of tents because they didn't have a
barrack.
Basics, their deals weren't over yet. So for 3 weeks, we was in these tents. And all we done was police call, go get shots. And I never got so many shots in my life.
What's police call?
Picking up trash. Picking up trash by hand, yeah.
Okay.
Cigarette butts, it didn't matter, whatever was out there.
So you didn't start training for the first week?
For about 3 weeks. They didn't have a place for us yet. There were so many people there, they just kept putting them in tent cities and backing them up. But they run us through all that, and then we got basic, and we did the regular basic deal. That one thing about these guys, we get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go run for breakfast. And the first little while, we may run a mile or two, and then it was 5 miles, and then it was 10 miles. When we left there, the 101st Airborne run on the same road we run on, and we outrun them. I thought that was pretty good. But I wasn't at the head of the class on that. But I was there. But that's... And then when basic was over, in these, it was... August, September, October, something. Well, we had 90 days in basic, I think it was. 6 weeks.
What did you learn in basic?
Oh, just we did a lot of physical exercises and handling our weapons. And they made us clean them and stuff once in a while. And setting up pup tents, and it was this basic stuff that you need to know. And I got out of there, and they put me in the airplane and flew me to Fort Sill, Oklahoma. They flew to Spotton, and then we took a bus into Fort Sill. And I was there till December on that Persian missile deal. That's the biggest big missile. I got a picture of it at home I showed you once.
What was the Persian missile deal?
It was a nuclear... It was all nuclear weapons. The smallest one we had was 10 times larger than the one they dropped on Hiroshima. Now them nukes, the bigger nukes, they're like 100 times larger.
How were you involved with the...
Well, I was a crewman to start with. And I think I did every crew station there.
What is a crew station?
Well, it's just that you have 3 crewmen in the NCO to fire the missile. It was our job to take care of it all. We have an officer over us that we didn't actually fire it. The officer has to do it, but some of them knotheads weren't best in the world.
So you're saying if you had to set off a nuclear missile, you were capable?
I'd have done it, you betcha.
Okay.
I might have got shot because I did, but I've done it.
Do you remember any of your instructors? Yeah.
No. One was Sergeant. We had a Sergeant White and a Sergeant Black that was our drill instructors. And how we got that deal, I don't know. There was a black guy and a white guy. And the white guy, he was higher ranking. And the black guy, he was, his name was Sergeant White, and the white guy was named Sergeant Black. So we're multiracial thing there. But we went to Fort Sill, and we didn't have no duties or nothing while we was at Fort Sill. We didn't pull no KP, we didn't pull no guard duty, we didn't pull nothing.
You were on vacation?
No, we was exempt because they wanted us to pay attention when we went. We went to school all day long on that missile, and then we went to the barracks and did what we had, a pass, standing pass. We could go down to the PX or go to a movie or something on base. You had to have, and then on weekends we'd get a off base pass. We could go downtown and be rowdy or so, whatever.
Okay. How did you get through all that?
How did I get through it? Just did it. You got to do it anyhow. I'm not going to get it over.
Now, this was during the Vietnam War. So you started out in Nashville. What camp was that?
Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Then they sent
it, it's
you.
It's just, we, the Kentucky, Kentucky and Tennessee, I think it's Tennessee, state line run right through the middle of our barracks. They had a line painted on it, and we fought over that.
So you went from Fort Campbell to Fort Sill.
Yeah.
Where else? Where'd you go and next?
Then, in December, they sent me home for 2 weeks. I left home on Christmas Day and went to Germany. And I got up real early that morning, and we went to town. I got on a bus and went to Denver, and they picked me up and took me to the airport, and we put me on a plane, and they flew me to Fort Dix. Pennsylvania or some New York, well, back there.
The Fort Dix, okay. And then
they gathered us up and put us on an airplane and flew us to Frankfurt, Germany, nonstop. Just
how many hours?
I don't know. I slept through some of it.
Okay.
But I was thinking it was 8 hours. But I hadn't had any sleep till then. And we got to Frankfurt, and it was dark, and they picked us up and took us down. There's a concern, I can't think of the name of it, and old German SS deal, that's where they took people and beat their heads out of them, so. And then there's little old rooms down in the basement. They're probably 6 foot wide and 8 foot long. And got a little bitty window. And got glass on it. Them guys could look in and see what you're doing. And there's just room to turn around in there. And then the whole round the basement was full of them. And, but anyhow, they gathered it up there, and we went to, they sorted us out. Everybody was going different places. And they put us on a train, and we went to Schwäbisch Gmünd, Germany, which is close to Stuttgart. I'd have to look at the map now and tell you. But they got the, put us on this train and put us in the last car, and they shut all the heat and electricity. There was no electricity, there was no heat, there was no, you know, there were no lights or anything. And there was none. We crawled up amongst, they had a bunch of mailbags going that way, and we crawled up amongst the mailbags to keep warm. It was about 40 below zero out.
Why would they shut off the heat?
And the Germans getting even with us.
Okay.
There was still a lot of dissent in Germany when I was over there. That was 20 years after the war and at this.
Okay.
But that, boy, there was a lot of people that still thought Hitler was pretty good. I mean, you get in the right places, and they was a little touchy.
Okay.
We fixed that, though, most of the time. It was a little worse for wear next morning, but we fixed most of it.
Do you remember arriving?
Arriving. They put us on that train, and we went down there, and they sent a, oh, they call them a 3/4-ton pickup with a tarp over it. And they picked us up in the mail. There were 7 or 8 of us out of that class that went there. And the mail bags. And we went up to headquarters, and this officer come out, and he was talking to us, and welcome to Germany, and blah, 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 blah. I don't know what he said, but he told them to feed us and put us to bed and leave us alone. We went to bed and slept for about 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Food ain't the greatest in the world. We got over there, the enlisted people, they fed them sea rations and stuff. And the cooks would take the sea rations and bust them out and make meal out of them. And we didn't get a lot of good stuff. The officers go in there and load their car up with the good stuff. We get meat and the officers load it. We never ate fresh meat. It was all that canned stuff. And we get meat and the officers go in there and they cut it. The mess cooks would cut it up and divide it between them. And all the officers in the battery would go in there and get their share of it. Take it home. They had barbecues. You could smell it from down the hill. They had barbecues. But the worst thing about that was the drugs were starting. We had people jump out of 5-story buildings.
Where would you get drugs?
Oh, they get them off posts. Somebody bring them in and sell it to them.
What kind?
Oh, I don't know what they was. Cocaine, marijuana, whatever. I don't know what they was, but I didn't get involved in that too much. There was a lot of marijuana, but there's a lot of hard drugs.
Okay.
But they ain't as hard as the ones we got now.
Okay.
That was kind of a bad deal.
Yeah.
But
what was
they put us in a battery, and we had a section sergeant that was just a bad person. I wanted to get rid of him a time or two. But some of that was kind of hard. I didn't help with any because I was always getting in trouble with him. I ended up on KP and guard duty and back to back. You go to KP, you got to be there at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, about 4 o'clock, and help the cooks get everything ready for the morning meal. And you do that, and you get off of there about 9 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock. And then they'd send you to CQ, and you'd be on CQ. Well, that's charge of quarters. They got a couple guys that kind of, they'll walk the halls once in a while, a couple times a night, to make you see what's going on. And just something they do. And they sit there by the phone. If something happened, they have to answer the phone and get hold of proper people. Because we were the highest status alert deal in Germany.
Why?
because of the nuclear weapons and the Germans. If the Germans started something, we was the number one deal.
Who did you feel was the enemy then?
Well, it's Russians and Czechoslovakia.
Okay, so everyone else is worried about Vietnam.
Oh, yeah, that's Vietnam. We were sitting there, and they's testing us all the time. We were testing them. But the tankers and stuff, we spent more time in the field than any unit in Germany.
Why?
Because of what we did and the lack of personnel.
So this really is the definition of the Cold War.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Okay. So basically you're babysitting nuclear weapons.
Yeah. And I got a year or so, wanted me to go to NCO school. And I told them, I ain't going there. I don't want no part of it. You let somebody else do it.
Is that a non-commissioned officer?
Yeah.
Okay.
So one time they just printed out some orders and made me an acting sergeant. So, they read that deal out at the morning work promotion. And I carried that paper around in my back pocket. And about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, my lieutenant, he was a pretty good guy, but he said, if you don't get them stripes on in the next 15 minutes, I'm gonna Article 15 you and take it away from you.
What's Article 15?
He could court my, well, it's a company punishment. They can take money out of your paycheck and give you extra duty and corporal punishment, kind of.
How did being a sergeant change your life?
Well, not too much, because we was doing the same thing. They got after me because we get new guys and they didn't know what they was doing. And I said, here, get out of the way and I'll do it all. I could do everything on that missile by myself. But you have to have them guys because they can't be three places at once. But I had a pretty good crew. They picked the best firing crew of all the batteries in Germany and sent them to the States to fire a missile. I got to go twice. Me and my crew got to go twice. That's quite a deal, watch that missile go. It was for me, because I never seen one before. They take off. But
what kind of missile?
Well, it was a two-stage rocket. It was probably, with the warhead on it, it was almost 50 foot long. And it was about 4-something feet across the middle of it, radius, diameter.
So you practice fired ones that didn't?
We only fired them. They picked us up. We loaded all of our gear. We go to Frankfurt and they fly us to White Sands, New Mexico. And we get our gear off there and practice a few days, and then we fire the missile. And then we load everything up.
You fired a live missile?
Yeah. It didn't have a nuclear warhead. It just got a cement on for balance. It's a dud. But we fired that missile that one time, 480 miles or something. I don't know exact, but it was 400 some miles. And put it in a 55-gallon barrel. They had a grid stake, you know, like for surveying. They had a grid stake with the coordinates on it that was on, that we put the missile. And this one of them guys out there decided, well, we'll just set a 55-gallon barrel over this. We took the barrel out.
So you're...
That was one of the best shots ever made with that missile. So we've done pretty good.
So they let you practice and then sent you back to Germany?
We just practiced a little bit to get our equipment running. It was so hot out there. We went to Salt Lake City, and then we went to Green River, Utah, and we fired in the White Sands, New Mexico. And when we got done, we loaded up and come back, and when we got back, we had to clean everything. Everything in there had to be washed and cleaned and shined up, ready, and we put it back online for you. But I suppose we didn't get much rest. And out there at Green River, it was so hot. They sent us to Salt Lake City, the airport there. And a bus picked us up, and we loaded all of our duffel bags and stuff in the bus, and we headed for Green River, and it was hot in that bus. And we said something about your air conditioner ain't working. He said, yeah, it is. And we got out there, and it was like 120. And guys coming off that bus step out there and pass out. They had medics stand on each side of the door to catch them when they come out. And you come out of that bus, and boy, everything went round. But I didn't fall or anything, but it was sure kind of hard. I was used to the heat better than most of them. But, and they just had tents. We pulled the flaps up so the breeze would blow through it and everything else. But
how long did you spend in
White
Sands?
Oh, we was there probably a couple of weeks.
One time that you went?
I went twice.
Okay.
2 years in a row. And that, I remember the last. Oh, I was getting kind of short, probably last 6 months. So they had a color guy. His name was Rhett. And they wanted him to take over my job because they needed a colored guy running. It was starting to get dicey. We had a lot of trouble. You could, there for a while when all that Negro fighting with, you know, in the 60s. Oh, if you went across the parade ground, you seen that picture with all the equipment on it. If we walked across there to the EM Club, they'd split your head open with a tire on. If we walked across that, and that ain't that far, if we walked across that mess hall, or that area, there'd be as high as 8 or 10 of us together. And if you had that many people, nobody bothered you. But they'd be hiding in them trucks and stuff ready to... There was guys who had their heads split open all the time. I know of two that got killed. They hit them wrong and got killed. But nothing ever happened out of it because they were colored guys. They kind of... Some of them... But some of the nicest people I know were colored people. There was a guy, his name was George Washington. He'd been to Vietnam, and he got in this missile deal somehow. And he was with the 1st Cavalry in Vietnam. He still wore his patch on him. But he was one of the nicest fellas. One night, a bunch of them caught me outside by myself and was going with me, and we was doing this talking back and forth deal before the ruckus started. And I knew I was in pretty bad shape. And old Washington walked out there. And he's a big, he's like 6'4". He walked out there and says, you fellas better go home before I hurt you. You leave him alone. But he was good all the time. I mean, anybody in our battery if he was around and they was in trouble, he stepped in the middle of it. So you can't, it ain't just colored people. It's just them individuals. Just like back there in New York City and stuff where they're burning stuff. That's the kind of people that cause the trouble. It's not, there's a lot of good colored people out there, just like white people's the same. There's some of us that ain't worth a darn, and there's some people that's just pretty good. But, and, but they had a rep, and so I was kind of in a command situation. And I just sat around the chair and tell Rhett to go do stuff. And when he done it, then I go check on him. Sometimes I had stood around watching him. I had to do a lot of that, but yes. But it was, I kind of got used to it. I go down, they had a little coffee shop that they run. You could eat breakfast down there and stuff if you wanted to buy it. Read the paper. We could get the Stars and Stripes down there. And I'd go down there and sit and drink coffee in the morning. I didn't even go to work for Mason. I let Rhett take care of that. I didn't want to deal with all that junk.
Since you were a sergeant. Yeah.
Well, so I let take care of that. And I had a driver with a Jeep, our battery, and when we was in the concern, we go out and service warheads at the warhead dump. It wasn't too far away. Mittenwall was the name of it. And we'd go out there and service warheads. They had guards on that thing now. There's three or four electric fences around it. Guards, machine guns, everybody. When we went in there to service weapons, we had two guards on us, one on each side.
What does service mean?
Well, you got to take them out and check them, make sure they're in usable condition. Sometimes they use them and send them back and there's scratches on them or something. Well, if there are, you got to have that warhead sent in the ordnance and they fix it, the paint on it. That paint is very important. If there's a little scratch on that warhead, when it goes, it'll burn up. Or it won't hit the target. It'll keep burning up. That some kind of special chalky looking paint on that. About a 16th of an inch thick. But if there's a, you have to marry with a micrometer deal to see how deep the scratch is. There's specifications on that. If it's so deep, I can't remember the numbers, but it's not a whole lot. But if they're so deep, you have to send them in order. We did stuff like that, and they got desiccant. And it takes the moisture out of there. And you're supposed to put so many in there, but we get these big old tubs. There's like 30-gallon tubs. And we just about dumped a whole tub in there so we didn't have to mess with it. And they stayed dry. We wasted a lot of the... But...
So if I get you right, you were servicing nuclear warheads.
Yeah. Check the pins on the where they connect. Make sure there ain't no bent ones. All kinds of little stuff. There ain't much to do on them. It's just a big bomb sitting there.
How exactly do you shoot a nuclear warhead?
How do you? They set it on there and they got a deal that it's solid fuel rocket. And they got a little deal, kind of like you shoot a rifle with the old percussion cap rifle. Well, there's a detonator in there, lights it, and it just goes. And this is a two-stage rocket. When it gets so far, it blows us. There's a case, we call it case venting device, and it blows. There's one on each side of it, and it blows the sides out of the rocket, and it blows the splice band. There's a ring that splices them together. And when it comes apart, it unplugs. And the second stage lights and takes off. There's a guidance system on it that this is old school stuff.
Where were you aiming these things?
Well, that was supposed to be a secret, but we got the coordinates and looked them up on maps, and they was like supply works, a whole bunch of train yards where all the stuff comes for the, if they have to fight a battle, they need supplies, vehicles, whatever it is, everything that they an army would use. And some of them were troop concentrations. If there was a big troop concentration, oh, this thing take out more, take out some little countries. We fired that thing in Kansas, it'd take out the whole state of Kansas.
I wanted you to be sober for that.
Sometimes. We did a lot of drinking, just putting up with stuff. We had officers in. I had an officer one time, they sent him in there. And I can't remember what his name was. I think it was Schwartz. He was out of OCS, and boy, he was just a strutting peacock now. I mean, everybody had to be just right. He pulled guard duty. He kicked the whole guard duty off, guard off, to make them go get, and they had to go do it all over again. And then that gets you in trouble at home because you got kicked off guard duty. Boy, you go on extra duty and all kinds of stuff. But he kicked them all off several times, and they, even the brass didn't like it. And one day he was just always. One day I went in the office. Rhett was running the deal. I went in there and I sat there with my feet up on the desk reading the Stars and Stripes, and he comes strutting in there, and boy, he went to chewing on me. And I said, I want to tell you something. I said, if the balloon goes up, if we go to war or whatever happens, if they fire a missile at us, you know, and we have to go, I said, you're the first son of a bitch I'm going to shoot. I said, I will kill you deader than a doornail immediately if I see you. Because he would get, he got out there one time. He's supposed to make the connections on the warhead. We spent over 72 hours. He just kept, every time he'd go to do it, he'd twist the pins, and it wouldn't make. So they have to go back to battalion, go to Mental Law, get a new warhead, bring it out there. And this went on and on and on. And finally, I just stepped up there and I said, sir, get the hell out of the way. I'm gonna make this thing so we can go home. And he just stepped back, because I talked to him kind of strong. But he just stepped back, and I just plugged her together, and we put it together, and everything went. But he was so... And we was in the field when I left. We was in the field pulling status when I got ready to clear post and leave. I had most of the stuff signed, but there's some stuff the last day you got to get to your commanding officer and your platoon leader and everybody to sign off. So I was going to go catch the Jeep. They have a Jeep that runs in into the concern with get mail, and sometimes they take messages and stuff. And so I was supposed to ride in with him, and we had breakfast, and then they had a work formation type deal, and somebody come up and said there's something wrong, and this guy hadn't been showing up for work, and he 4 or 5 days he had, and he worked they had a little store type deal in the field, and he run in, and he was kind of, he just did what he wanted. He could sure get you in the corner if he wanted to use it. If you wanted something, you better do what he said. But anyhow, this E6 from Carmel section, he was standing there, and we went over there and had to kick the door down. And this guy had hung himself with a pair of trousers off the heat pipes in the top. He was just plumb black. I never seen such a gross deal in my life. And nobody had a pocket knife, so I got mine out and gave it to him to cut him down. But that was one of the worst things I seen. But we had several of them. They get on them drugs and just... you'd have one every once in a while that commit suicide.
How did you get selected for this service rather than sent to Vietnam?
I don't know, because I wasn't that smart.
Didn't you have to take tests or...
No, they just said, these people go here and these people go here.
Okay.
When I got out, they just sent us to where they wanted us to go. Some of them were cooks, some of them were infantry, some of them, you know, they just sent you. Maybe they went to mechanic school.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Did you receive any citations?
No. Good talk, I don't.
Okay.
Boy, I cheated them on that deal.
How did you stay in touch with your family while you were over there?
Not very much. I got a letter or two. They knew where I was at, and I just, if something's wrong, we let somebody know. If everything's going right, we don't worry about talking to anybody.
Okay. Did you feel pressure, or were you stressed?
Oh, God, yeah. Mainly just people you had to deal with. Some of them, you know, like the officers and the NCOs that was there, it was just people in general that caused it. I had people in my platoon I wouldn't turn my back on for it. They'd stick a knife in it. Kind of deals. That's why I'd rather went to Vietnam. They'd shoot me and get it over with. But it was what it was. All I wanted to do was get through it and come home and live my life. But I drank so much in the Army when I come home, I got home in 70, probably 15 years before I quit drinking. I drank so much, I could sit down, I'd go home and sit down on the porch at night and open a 50 whiskey and drink the whole thing, throw the ball away. Every day. I didn't drink in the daytime, just at night, but I was drinking so much it's what about killed me. And then I got in a little trouble doing that, and then I got a DUI, and I had to go see the judge. And So they got, I got in to Norton, and I waited till we got the wheat cut. And we cut wheat the first part of July, around the 4th, or I don't remember what it was. And I went up there, and boy, I was in such bad shape. It's where I lived. That doctor up there checked me out and said, if you keep drinking, you wouldn't live 6 months. Now, I don't know whether he was telling me that to scare me or whether it was true. But it wasn't good. I seen guys come in Norton up there just yelling. You know that jaundice? And and they'd go home and then you'd hear they died.
Is this Norton, Kansas?
Yeah.
And what
That's
is
it? That's the Valley Hope.
Okay. They try to help people straighten up?
Yeah. They do drugs and alcohol. It's a good deal, or was then.
Is it Alcoholics Anonymous, or did you get
into
that?
Well, it wasn't Alcoholics Anonymous, but they use that in there even. Mm-hmm. We had meetings, you know.
How long were you there?
I was there. Two months, I think. Mm-hmm. And my counselor, they had little groups, like 10 or 15 or 20 people in a bunch. Mm-hmm. And they had a counselor that they would sit there and talk every day, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And he told me, he said, I don't think you'll ever quit drinking. I think by yourself like you are, I don't think you got a chance in hell of staying sober. And I went home and I decided I was going to stay sober. And I had a friend, and I'd go down there at night. If I got the, you just get where you just got to have a drink, and then you almost kind of going crazy or something. And I'd go down there and bang on the side of his trailer house and go out to the barn, and he'd put his clothes on and come out there. He could sit down there, and there was a hallway through the middle of the barn, runway, and he could sit down there and lean back and go to sleep. As long as he was there, I was all right. But I walked back and forth in that barn so much, I think if, I don't know whether they tore it down or not, if it did, there's still a trail in the middle of that barn where I walked. And I did that several years. I put a chain out there on a tree with a padlock so that if I could go somewhere and I got that away, I could chain myself to that tree and throw the key away so I couldn't get out away from it. I didn't ever use it, but it was there.
Where was this?
Fowler. Mm-hmm. I was working for Stanley Post over at Fowler when that happened. He didn't help my drinking any. But I should have got away from there a long time, but I didn't know where to go. I was drinking so much, you know, I hate to go ask somebody for a job. I just tried to hang on to one I got and kept going. But since then, things have been pretty good. But that first 5 years after I quit drinking was rough. It was pretty rough.
So this would have been mid-70s?
Yeah.
Okay. How did you come to Ashland?
How'd that come? Well, I needed to get away from Stanley. And I was talking to a guy, and they had an opening at the county down here. And I come down and talked to them, and they hired me. I didn't know nothing about running the maintainer or anything, and I got to run the maintainer.
Okay.
Okay. That's how I got down here. And then I broke horses when, too. I had some mops over here in Penn, and I'd take horses in and break them.
I should have asked you, how did you get out of the military?
How?
Did you serve one term?
I served one tour. I was 3 years.
Okay.
And I got out. But I got it over with. I had 3 years of inactive reserve on top of that, but they could have called me back. But I never heard from anybody. But they could have called me back for something if they'd wanted me. They didn't want me out of the war field. Mm-hmm.
When were you discharged?
Well, it was July the 20 something. I'll give you that paper.
Yeah, and I've got it on the computer.
July the 20-something of 70.
And then you came back and got a job, and it wasn't the greatest.
Yeah.
Okay. But you spent a little time at Norton trying to kind of get things leveled out.
I had to. It was so bad that there wasn't no choices.
Okay.
If I didn't do it, they was going to send me to the... They had an alcohol deal at the state hospital. They was going to send me up there if I didn't do it on my own.
Okay. So they held that over your head.
That wouldn't have worked. There ain't very many people go through that deal that stay sober. But Valley Hope, I got all the good things to say about them there is.
Do you remember the day that your service ended?
Yeah, well, that was that day, you know, that guy... hung himself, and then I got on the, after that, I got on the Jeep and went to the concern, signed out. The next morning, the bus was there. I had to sign. I didn't have but 24 hours to get my stuff straight to leave. I signed everything out, and I got on the bus the next morning and headed home. And I was so tired. My brother lives up by Myers, Colorado. And I got a bus, and I met him there. He come and got me. Anyway, a couple of days, it was right at the time that the Cheyenne Frontier Days was on. And we went up there. And that night I went to sleep in the front seat of his pickup. He had a camper on it. Him and his wife were sleeping in the back. And I went to sleep and laid on the horn. And I never even knew it. They was banging on the doors and windows trying to get me awake so I could quit. But...
So you stayed with your brother for a little bit after you got out?
Oh, yeah, a week.
And then what?
Got a job, went to work.
Because you did not technically go to Vietnam, how did people treat you when you got back?
Same way they treat them. Like, oh, when I come through Denver, there's the bus station, there was... people there calling us baby killers, and just like they treated, they was a lot of them guys burning their DAF cards and all that, and they'd call you baby killers, and hell, I didn't have nothing to do with babies. But they couldn't tell the difference. I got to Denver, and I went in the bathroom and took my uniform off and stuck it in the deal and put some civilian clothes on. That was the last time I ever wore that deal. It was enough for me.
Did you make any friends in the service?
Oh, yeah, but like old Linnell and them, but he's a really good guy, really. I don't know what that gesture was that he was talking about. I don't think it was accidental, but
Did you keep up with him? Did you keep up with him after?
No, I was going to, and I never did. I never got a letter from them, and they never. We just.
But went on.
Him, and there's another guy that was at some close to Helena, Montana, and them guys was really nice people. I had four or five of us run around together all the time.
Did you join the VA?
No. I can't join, you mean the VFW?
Or the Veterans Administration VFW. Or anything?
I got to join the Legion, and I never did, because most of the time I'm busy and can't get to it.
Okay.
I don't know where they ain't never told me what they can do to help you. And they keep saying things, but I can't get them to.
So after you
they gave you a little bucket knife and dust if you join, or this ring, and I don't need that stuff. I need something with the handling the VA and stuff.
Yeah.
There's a veteran's deal at up at Dodson, and these guys work for the veterans. They're not government hired. Mm-hmm. But they can help you navigate some of the stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to get through all that. But that's about it.
Well, so after the war, you came back. You worked on a ranch for a while. You came to Ashland and worked with the county for a while.
Yeah. Well, I worked for the county, and I day worked. I'd go down in. I did most of mine in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And I'd break horses down there. My friend Jim Applegate, he was at Fowler when I go by the thing. But he helped me, and he moved on a ranch down here in Oklahoma, down here, and Ralston, mm-hmm. and part of Barbie Steel. Mm-hmm. And I'd go down there on the creek and set my tent up and ride coach. He'd come by in the morning, and I'd have one saddled up, ready to go, and we'd take him down the creek, and I'd get on him, and we'd ride him a little bit in the creek, and then take off through there. And he got to going pretty good. Old Jim had a hauler rope on him, and old Jim would throw me the rope, and he'd just ride off. Next day, he'd come back. Are you alive? I seen him a time or two when I was riding. He'd be sitting way off somewhere. You could just barely see him. He's sitting on the hill looking to see if he could find me, make sure I was moving.
Okay.
But he didn't come around, let his presence be known.
He didn't pester you.
No. But he'd be way off out there somewhere, looking over the hill. So that was kind of, that helped. Made you feel better about getting your brains knocked out.
How did those 3 years of service affect your life later on?
I think it made a better person out of me.
Why?
Well, I got out and seen the world and learned a little different way of living. Mm-hmm. But I think it made a better person out of me. But, mm-hmm.
In retrospect, how do you feel about serving?
About, I'd do it again if I had to. If push come to shove, I'd be there. I have no qualm, but if we got in a deal, if we had to do something, I'd be there with them.
Is there anything that you would like to add that we didn't cover?
I think we covered about everything. That's about it.
Gary, thank you for your service.
You're welcome.